So today, we're going to begin. I know you wish Josh were here because he does better with the announcements. I know, it's okay. He'll be back next week. I could have done them via videotape or something. I don't know. Anyway, today we're continuing our series, The Names of God. And John started us off last week by talking about sheep and shepherds. He threw in some sheep humor. And I was very glad to hear that many of you rose to the challenge and sent sheep humor back to him. You sent sheep humor back to him, sheep puns, those kinds of things. Considering the fact that when a few years ago, a while back, I mentioned penguins, and I've been getting penguin things for months and years, lots of penguin things, penguins on my desk, penguin things everywhere, videos, all. Please send stuff to him, sheep things, sheep memes, other such things. And I ask you very sincerely here, please, please, don't be sheepish about it. Was that a sheep shot? Sorry. Well, today I want to continue and begin. I want to begin really with today with a look at the importance of names, because names in the Bible are understood very differently than they are in our culture today. There's a deeper meaning to names historically than we are used to in our culture. Because names today are basically ways of identifying and distinguishing someone from someone else. And we go with things that are popular and interesting and sound good to us. And names change over time as well. And so I want to just start with the top five baby names. And I want to ask you, what do you think the top five baby names, guesses first for girls, are today? Just call it out. Girls, top girls' names today. Emma. Okay. A couple more. I know this is weird to talk in church. I'm sorry. Anybody else? Okay. Well, here they are. Sophia, Emma. Some of you really nailed that one. Olivia, Ava, and Mia. Okay, now the boys. Guesses for boys. Tyler, Luke. Aren't boys more difficult? Girls' names come up so much easier. Jacob. Okay, here they are. Top five names for boys. Jackson, Aiden, Lucas, Liam, and Noah. So just out of curiosity, I wanted to look my name up. Glenn. Now, now you're already laughing, because, and I wanted to look my name up, because in the past, I've looked my name up, but it's 2017, things changed, so I wanted to look it up, and I was very sad when I discovered that Glenn didn't crack the top 10, it didn't crack the top 100, or even the top 250, it was ranked 1,904th. Most popular baby name in 2017, and that's down from its high in 2016 of 1,173. Now, back in the previous, century, when I was born, Glenn was more popular. It was a more popular name because there was a really cool astronaut named John Glenn. Let me just stress, very cool, super, super cool astronaut. John Glenn, and a lot of parents name their kids after John Glenn, but there are no cool astronauts named Glenn anymore, so the name doesn't crack the top 1,000. And I tried to boost the name. I'm going to be honest. I tried my best to convince Denise that one of our kids should be named Glenn, and it didn't work out so well. I did manage to sneak it in on my first son's middle name, Stephen Glenn, so we did get a Glenn in there. And I've told Kaylee, I joke around with her, her name is Kaylee Grace, Kaylee G, and I've joked with her, which is maybe not so much a joke, that the G actually isn't for Grace after all. She doesn't buy it. So names are important in our culture for how they sound, how interesting they are, what they bring to mind as we think about that name. But in biblical times, in ancient Near Eastern cultures, names had greater depth and significance to them. And in the Bible, the names that are given to God are numerous, and each of them kind of delve into, plumb the depths of God's nature, who he is. They tell us about his character, what God is like, what we might expect from him, how he operates in the world, what he thinks of us. It speaks of his person, his power, his ability, what he does in this world, what he does among his people. And so if you want to know God better, if you want to know God better, you need to know his names. And today I want to talk about what is arguably the most important name given to God in the Bible. It's the name Yahweh. Now, when I say the name Yahweh, the truth is we're only guessing. We're taking a guess that this is how the name is actually pronounced. Because when you read the English Bible, what you're going to see, you're going to see the word Lord capitalized. And when you see the word Lord capitalized, that is what is called the Tetragrammaton, okay? It's a scholar speak about this. It's basically four consonants, YHWH. It's the Tetragrammaton. It's found 6,823 times in the Bible. And what's interesting about it and puzzling about it is that no one knows how to pronounce those four consonants because there are no vowels. Jews saw this name as so holy and so sacred that they never included the vowels when they wrote it down. And at first they began to speak the word, the name, but then over time, not only would they not write the name because it was so sacred, they refused to speak it as well. They completely eliminated any ability for us to understand how it is said. So we're guessing how God's name, how this tetragrammaton is pronounced. Some people add a J sound into it and get the word Jehovah. So you've heard Jehovah God. Others say, well, there is no J sound in Hebrew, so we're going to stick with the Yahweh. That's how they see it. In fact, most scholars say that is the best way to pronounce these four consonants, Yahweh. So for our purposes, that's what we'll do. We'll call this name, this sacred name, Yahweh. And this virtually unpronounceable name, it is so holy, and that, again, they wouldn't write it, they wouldn't speak it. And we have to go all the way back to the time of Moses to begin to get a sense of what it actually means. Like, what does this mean? It goes back to Exodus chapter 3, verse 10, where at a critical period of time, when Israel, the nation, they were actually the Hebrew people at the time, were in Egyptian bondage. They had been in slavery for over 400 years. They were wondering where God was at, what he was doing, what's happening. And God reveals himself to Moses at a very critical time when God is about to deliver Israel from Egyptian bondage. And this is what he says to Moses. He says in verse 10 of chapter 3, "So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites: 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation.'" Here in verse 15, we see the capital letters, L-O-R-D. That's the tetragrammaton that we're talking about here. That's the consonants without the vowels. And this is a name that is revealed to us with an interesting parallel, because the word "I am" is used almost synonymously with the word "Lord." There's this parallel name, the "I am." The Yahweh is also the "I am." It's a little bit confusing, but it's a word play. It's a word play. This "I am" is an expansion of the name Yahweh. It's an explanation of the word Yahweh. It's built on the same Hebrew word. It's used interchangeably here. So they're basically saying the same thing, that this sacred, holy, separate, set apart, powerful, unmatched God is revealing himself to Moses, and he is Yahweh. He is the I Am. So now the question really is, what does that mean? Like, what do we do with that revelation? And I think there's something really, really important, a couple things that are vital in this name that help us understand God better, understand our lives better, and understand our future better. I think the first thing we see here is that there is only one true God who has always existed and will always exist. There's only one true God. There's only one eternal God. There's only one unchanging God. There's only one God in whom there is no shifting shadow, and he is a God who's always existed and will always exist. And this is important for us to know because today in our world, there are all kinds of forces and powers and people that vie for first place in your life and in my life. There are all kinds of religions and spiritual leaders and gurus who tell us that they should be the ones speaking into our lives, that if we want a good life, we need to follow what they say. There's so many people, there's so many different values that vie for first place in our hearts and our lives. And whether we admit it or not, every single person on the planet worships something. If we're not religious at all, think of a person that's not religious at all. They also worship something. There's something at the top of their list of priorities. There's something of greatest importance. There's something of utmost passion for them. Whatever is at the top of that list for them, well, that's their God. Everybody worships something, whether we admit it or not. For many people, that in our culture and in our world, the default is to enthrone ourselves, that we sit at the center of the universe, that we are a God unto ourselves, that other people exist. Yes, yeah, they exist, but they orbit around us, that this is really about me. I'm calling the shots. I'm forging my destiny. I'm setting a path forward for my life, and I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to follow my inclinations and my heart. Wherever my heart leads me, I'll go. And we live this way. We enthrone ourselves. There are other gods, too, in our world today. The god of politics. We've talked about that, how today there's an increasing focus and passion on political leaders and political parties, that they're going to solve our problems, that our political leaders and political parties are Jesus. They're Jesus. They're everything to us. We'll become whatever we need to and get all kinds of vile and crazy, whatever it takes, because we got to protect our religion. Politics as our new Jesus. There's the god of money, the god of power, the god of self-sufficiency, the god of independence, where we say, I don't need others, I don't need anybody else. I can do this completely on my own. Whatever is first in our lives, that is our God. But there's something we need to know about these gods of our own making. There's something we need to know about these gods that we create for ourselves, that we manufacture and we make up. And it's this, that these gods are human in origin. They are small g gods, and soon we're going to learn about their catastrophic limitations in being our God. That if you trust in money, if that is the most important thing, or power, or prestige, or position, if you trust in your politics, or some person, or you think life is all about some celebrity, or these kind of things, and you live for these things, one day it's going to dawn on you, they have let you down. They will fail you catastrophically. Small g gods have a way of doing that. They have limitations, weaknesses, they're impotent to be a true God. And by following these small g gods, not only do we set ourselves up for disappointment in this life, but we also face the utter dismay of realizing we've blown it when we enter the next life. And so ultimately, This is what makes Yahweh completely different. He's eternal. He's always been. He's always been there. He always will be. He's not a God that will disappoint or let us down. He's not feeble. We're not going to see catastrophic failure because of him and trusting in him. He's always existed. He's the only uncaused cause. He's the one that is solid, and he's one we can declare as the greatest of all. There is no one greater. No reality or force or deity is greater than Yahweh, than the great I am. This means really that ultimate reality completely revolves around him. Ultimate reality revolves around him. We can pretend there is no God. Millions of people today pretend there is no God, that they craft the universe around themselves and they kind of manufacture a world where they push God out and they laugh at people who believe. They scoff at those who might be followers of Jesus and say, well, you're just weak. You just can't figure things out for yourself. You just can't make your life work. So you need a crutch to get through things. And so we'll create this world where we, again, are the center of the universe. And we can say that, you know, those who believe in God, they're not very smart. They're not very educated. They're not really capable. We can buy hook, line, and sinker into what professors tell us. That, you know, as they talk about Christians and as they knock down those who believe, you know, disparage faith and tear down, you know, believers from their secular pulpits. And that's what they are in their classrooms. They set up a pulpit. You think it's a classroom. It's not. It's a religious setting. And they set up their pulpits and disparage Christians, and yet they are unchallenged. No one can speak up. And so they have a soapbox. And sometimes we think, wow, they're a professor. They must be right. But with all these things, we cannot miss here one thing. That despite the pressure, despite a culture that is tilting against faith, in the end, we will see it's absolutely absurd to live with anything but Yahweh, the one true God, as the center of our world. It'll be absolutely absurd to live with any other God as being foremost in our lives. Every single person who's ever lived will either rejoice one day, absolutely rejoice with abundant, profound joy that they made devotion to Yahweh their number one priority, their A1 priority, that he was the most important voice and power and guide in your life, or they're going to have serious regret that they blew it, that they tried to create a world without him, and reality broke that down. So ultimately, all reality revolves around him. The past has been created by him. In the present, he is here. The future, he will always exist. And we will see him, and we will know him, and that reality will come to bear, and we will see it firsthand. He alone is the eternal God. So many other scriptures tell us exactly the same thing. Isaiah 57 says, "For this is what the high and lofty one says, he who lives forever, whose name is holy, I live in a high and holy place, but also with him who is contrite and lowly in spirit." Psalm 102 says, "In the beginning you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish." This world will perish. The system of this world will perish. The values of this world will perish. The false gods that we rely on and that everyone says we should rely on, those gods are doomed, absolutely doomed. They're going to perish. They will perish. But you remain. They will all wear out like a garment, like clothing. You will change them, and they will be discarded. They have no future. But you remain the same, and your years will never, ever end. And so the world is going to perish. And in the end, only one thing remains, the ultimate reality of the one true God who created all things, who is with us today, and who is with us forever. But there's more implications to this. There's more happening. Because there is only one true God, yes, but then that means also there's only one true God who's dependable and can meet our every need. There's only one God that's not going to let you and me down. There's only one God that's going to be faithful. There's only one God that's always going to come through. There's only one God that is always true to his word. He is unchanging, eternal. One deity we can count on and trust. And this is great news for us. Great news in a world where too often our trust costs us. Isn't that true? Too often in our world, our trust, the trust we put in other people or other things, it costs us something. We make ourselves vulnerable by trusting someone. We see that in broken marriages where hearts are ripped apart and trust is violated. We see this in a world where people will take advantage of us quickly when they see, you know, we're vulnerable. Well, some people say we're going to help you, but they end up hurting us. We're going to, you know, take your finances and invest them, and then they steal from us. So often trust today gets violated. But this is what is different about who God is. God never violates our trust. There are people too. We don't want to be too cynical. We don't want to be too cynical and say, yeah, the world, you can't trust anybody. That's not true. God's going to bring people into our lives that we can trust. But trust is earned. But ultimately, they, when at their best, people at their best, are a reflection of the nature of the perfect God in heaven, who is always trustworthy, who we can always count on, who we can always turn to. That no matter what, how our world spins, what our circumstances might be, he is there. Psalm 90 says this very same thing. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. I love this verse because, you know, our world sometimes can feel like it's tilting. We can feel like, you know, sometimes when the world feels like it's crashing down on us, the weight of it is just on us, and we feel like, man, we're getting squished. We're getting flattened by circumstances. When our world feels that way, God says, no, I'm your rock. I'm your refuge. You know, I'm the one that can be your dwelling place, your safe place. You can run to me. I'll take care of you. You know, when the world is tilting in a way that seems out of control, when our bills are mounting and we just can't seem to pay them, when our kids struggle, when a relationship crumbles, when we're walking through life and we feel like we've got a good pace going forward, and all of a sudden something happens and the rug just gets pulled out from underneath our feet, and we find ourselves midair, tumbling, falling hard, crashing to the ground. We've had those moments when we feel like we're stable, like all is good, and we're walking along, and then all of a sudden it's a curveball that life brings us, and man, that rug gets pulled out, and we're just taking this tumble, and we're like, man, I'm hitting hard. I'm getting bruised. I'm getting battered because of these circumstances, and it's in those moments that we realize, wow, God is the one who catches us, who stabilizes us. When the stress of life mounts and our future seems uncertain, and we feel like maybe the bad moments of this actual moment in my life, this season of my life, these bad moments aren't going to change. I look to the future and it looks to me, wow, it's just more of the same. More of the same pain and problems and difficulties. I don't see light at the end of the tunnel. I don't see a way out of this. It's in those moments that we're reminded here that we're not alone. We've not been abandoned. God is with us. He sees us. He knows what's happening. And he wants to be your dwelling place. He wants to keep you safe in those moments and assure you, you're going to be okay. You're not a pawn in a cruel world. You're not just going through life without purpose. life is not random. Yahweh, the great I Am, is there and always has been, will be our rock and our refuge in our toughest, toughest moments. But God isn't just there. He's not just present. He also wants to meet our needs. And that's where I think this really unusual, confusing explanation of Yahweh comes in. Yahweh is the I Am who I am. He's the I Am. And we listen to that and say, man, that's kind of weird. But I want you to think about the significance of that name for Moses. Moses is in a period of time where for a long, long time, God has seemed silent. Sometimes we feel that way too. God has not been active and helping as the people thought he should help. Sometimes we feel that way. God, why aren't you intervening? You have opportunities, but you're not. And Moses is called to lead the people, and he's like, man, they're discouraged, and I'm discouraged. And yet God comes to Moses and said, the day is coming. The day is coming when I'm going to deliver you from Egyptian bondage, and I'm sending you to Pharaoh to let him know that you're leaving. We're leaving. We're out of here. And he's not going to be into it so much, but guess what? I'm going to be with you. I'm going to help you through this. I have your future in mind. I see exactly what you're going through, and I have a plan, and I've had a plan all along. I think it's a picture of how God comes to Moses and says, whatever you need in this moment, Moses, and you're going to need a lot, I am all that you need. I am everything you need. I am the power you need. I am the resource you need. Do not fear the future. Do not fear what is happening. I think it's a powerful message to you and me today. That if you need deliverance, I am, says, I am your deliverer. If you need direction, I am. He says, I am your guide. If you need comfort, I am. I am your comforter. If you need a sense of assurance that things will be okay, I am. I am your assurance. If you need hope or power or provision, I am. I am your provision. I will provide all you need to get through this moment and in the end prevail. So it's a strange word, but a powerful word that speaks about that whatever resource we need, God is saying to Moses and to you and to me, whatever that is, I am that resource. So turn to me, look to me, lean on me, and know that I'm always, always there. This is exactly what the psalmist says in Psalm 20. May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of God, the God of Jacob, protect you. May he send help from the sanctuary and grant you support from Zion. Now I know that the Lord, Yahweh, he saves his anointed. He answers him from his holy heaven with saving power of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in someone totally different, radically, radically different. We trust in the name of the Lord our God. I mean, look at what the Lord does. He answers you. He comes to us in our distress. He protects you. He sends you help. God actually is in the business of mobilizing other people to help you through a struggle you're dealing with right now. That doesn't just happen like this esoteric type spiritual thing like God does something. He can do whatever he wants to do, but often he mobilizes people. He mobilizes people to accomplish his work. And so he sometimes grants you support. He sends you help through other people. He answers. He has saving power. And what I love about this passage is verse 7. It says, some trust in chariots and some trust in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. And it's a powerful statement because in ancient cultures, horses and chariots were symbols of self-sufficiency and power. The more capable people and leaders had more horses, the more powerful had more chariots. And here it is easy for an ancient leader in the Near Eastern culture, for an Israelite king, to think, you know what? I got all these chariots and horses. I could take care of myself. I don't need other problems. I can face things with my own ability and resources. I don't need to rely on God. And God's saying, no, no. It's not about you making things happen. It's not about you being resourceful. It's not about you being smart enough to figure this out. No, don't trust in chariots and horses. Trust in the name of the Lord your God. It speaks about a challenge to our own hearts. You know, and I want to ask, where do you turn? Where do you turn when you face a huge problem in your life? Where do you turn when you struggle? Where's the first place you go when worry starts to creep into your heart? Where do you turn when fears begin to build and you have uncertainty in your life, when your energy is spent and you feel worn out and weak? Where's the first place you turn? Do you turn to your own resources and your own ability? Or like the psalmist says, no, I'm not trusting in my horses and my chariots, my resourcefulness and my own power. But I'm trusting in the name of the Lord, my God. Ultimately, there's only one true God, Yahweh. There's only one great I Am. And He's revealed Himself to Moses. He's revealed Himself to us. But there's one more critical thing we have to ask. Maybe you're asking it in your own mind. How does Yahweh in the Old Testament relate to Jesus in the New Testament? I mean, how are we supposed to make sense of that? You know, what is the connection between Jesus and Yahweh? And I want to just go to the New Testament, because one day Jesus was talking with the religious leaders. They hated Him. They hated Him for the miracles He did and for the crowd He gathered, for the fame that was building, for His influence. They hated Him for what He said and what He represented. They wanted to do everything they could to shut Him up and discredit Him among the people. And one day He said something really odd and actually so extreme, it was like an atomic bomb that blew up in Palestine. He was talking about their great father, the great father of the Jewish community, Abraham. And He said to them that Abraham died, but me, Jesus said, I'm greater than death itself. Well, that set off a firestorm. And they said this to Him. Are you, the Jewish leaders said to Jesus, are you greater than our father Abraham? He died and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are? Jesus replied, your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. You are not yet 50 years old, the Jews said to Him. And you have seen Abraham? I tell you the truth, Jesus answered. Before Abraham was born, I am. As we look into the face of Jesus, we're looking into the face of that God, Yahweh, Jehovah, however we pronounce it. He is Jehovah God. He is Yahweh. He is the great I Am. We're looking into the face of the very one who revealed Himself to Moses thousands of years ago and now reveals Himself to us. And so today, I encourage you, bring your needs to Jesus. Bring your concerns to Him. Lean on Him. Trust in Him. Let Him be your guide. Don't go for the small g gods anymore. Make Him the A1 priority in your life. Because in the end, whatever you're going through, whatever power or resource you need, we need to hear the amazing words from Jesus. Whatever you need today, Jesus says, I am. Let's pray.